De Julian Assange insistirá en que el Reino Unido le otorgue el salvoconducto para que abandone el país europeo.
Hemos planteado que busquemos una alternativa, como la que hace un momento he planteado, para que los derechos humanos de un ciudadano no sigan siendo vulnerados en este momento y durante un año entero, sin haberse iniciado ni siquiera un proceso judicial en Suecia. El señor Assange sufre la vulneración de sus derechos humanos y creemos que es tiempo de que eso termine.
Ahora Wikileaks empezó a funcionar en el 2006, pero en el año 2010 el portal escandalizó al mundo publicando alrededor de 250.000 cables secretos de la diplomacia estadounidense. Desde entonces las filtraciones de esta página siguen revelando detalles comprometedores sobre diferentes líderes mundiales. Assange está bajo alerta roja de Interpol por el caso sueco, pero es importante decir que los cargos oficiales hasta ahora no están presentados. Se encontraba en Reino Unido bajo fianza, apelando contra su extradición a Suecia, y durante ese tiempo permaneció activo. Escribió un libro e hizo 12 entrevistas con las figuras políticas más relevantes de la actualidad para la cadena RT. Cuando perdió el último juicio, ese periodista australiano se refugió en la Embajada de Ecuador en Londres para evitar su extradición. Pero Assange asegura que una vez llegue a Suecia, será entregado a Estados Unidos, de donde, según su opinión, podría ser condenado a muerte o a cadena perpetua por la publicación de miles de cables diplomáticos.
En Estados Unidos, familias afectadas por acciones violentas y mortales de agentes de la patrulla fronteriza han enviado un video a las senadoras Dianne Feinstein y Barbara Boxer en un intento de incorporar en la iniciativa de ley S-744 una cláusula que requiera el uso de cámaras de video tipo lapel en el uniforme del personal de la Border Patrol. Esta es una de las madres en el video.
Soy la señora María Puga, esposa de Anastasio. Mi esposo, el mayo 28 del 2010, fue golpeado, torturado por la patrulla fronteriza. A causa de esos golpes y esa tortura, mi esposo falleció. La familia ha sufrido, ha quedado destrozada. Yo me quedé con 5 hijos. Era mi esposo por 20 años. Aquí tengo estos dos, son los niños más chicos con los que me quedé. Ellos me preguntan que dónde está su papá, que por qué mataron a su papá. Yo no les puedo dar respuestas, el caso no se ha aclarado.
Anastasio Hernández Rojas, esposo de María Puga, fue golpeado y atormentado con descargas eléctricas en San Isidro, California, por una docena de agentes de la patrulla fronteriza, causándole la muerte. Puga y otros familiares de víctimas de esa entidad policial alegan que el uso de cámaras de video por los agentes documentaría sus actividades y reduciría el número de incidentes del uso de fuerza excesiva. Además, dicen, crearía un sistema de rendición de cuentas que ahora no existe. Los legisladores republicanos ponen como condición para apoyar la iniciativa de ley de reforma a las leyes de migración una mayor seguridad en la línea internacional fronteriza, es decir, más agentes a lo largo de la frontera. La licenciada y directora de la Alianza San Diego, Andrea Guerrero, habla de lo que sería una mayor presencia de agentes en la región.
Para nosotros que vivimos aquí en la frontera, eso significa peor calidad de vida, significa que hay agentes que están andando en nuestros barrios, en nuestras calles. Hay personas en uniforme que me están pidiendo papeles cuando subo al camión, cuando subo al tren, que no vivo en paz por la preocupación que tiene la comunidad, que se lo van a parar, pedir sus papeles, o peor, que los van a pegar o van a matar. Esos agentes, esa agencia, la patrulla fronteriza, desafortunadamente tiene una cultura de impunidad y están dañando, lastimando la confianza que tenemos en nuestro gobierno.
La abogada señala que su organización ha documentado los asesinatos y actos de violencia de la patrulla fronteriza y, a juzgar por el inexistente número de castigos, la credibilidad del gobierno está ahora en tela de juicio.
Hemos documentado 20 personas que han sido matadas por la patrulla fronteriza. Una tercia de esas personas son ciudadanos, una tercia son jóvenes y todos son residentes de la frontera. En ningún caso hemos visto un cargo penal, no hemos visto ninguna acción de la patrulla que han quitado a esos agentes de su puesto. Siguen trabajando y seguimos con el miedo que en cualquier momento, en cualquier día, lo que ha pasado a estos 20 gente puede pasar a mí o a ti o a tu hijo. Entonces, la cultura de impunidad viene del hecho de que no vemos ninguna disciplina, no vemos ninguna justicia cuando nos lastiman, cuando nos matan, y ese es un problema.
Guerrero subraya que las arbitrariedades de los agentes no se limitan a la gente de color, sino que se extienden al resto de los residentes de la frontera. Luego, para ilustrar el punto, habla de cómo los patrulleros intentaron encubrir sus actos de violencia arrestando a un testigo ocular del incidente.
Eso no solo está pasando a los migrantes, eso también está pasando a los ciudadanos aquí. No solo a los hispanos, no solo a los morenos, pero a muchas personas. Te doy un ejemplo. Cuando mataron a Valentín Tatiquín aquí, ciudadana, madre de 5 hijos, aquí en nuestro barrio, el testigo presente, que es afroamericano, veterano de la guerra en Irak, en lugar de pedir qué es lo que viste, señor, qué nos puede contar, los agentes de la patrulla fronteriza decidieron detenerlo, arrestarlo y llevarlo para que no podía decir nada a nadie. Fue la policía local que lo vieron y dijeron, ay, pues no, ustedes, agentes, no pueden llevar a esta persona. O sea que esta cultura de impunidad nos afecta a todos.
Al tiempo que los familiares de las víctimas de la patrulla fronteriza se movilizan para hacer algunos cambios a su alrededor, la Oficina Congresional sobre el Presupuesto de la Nación indica que los millones de indocumentados que entren formalmente a la fuerza laboral después de reformarse las leyes de migración, con sus impuestos podrían reducir el déficit federal del país.
Si todo sale bien, yo creo que vamos a ver una propuesta en el escritorio del presidente en septiembre o octubre. Pero realmente hay unos obstáculos grandotes y es bien importante que las personas escuchando a esto llamen a sus representantes, a sus senadores, para decirles que apoyen a la reforma migratoria, que necesita una reforma que sea humana, que nos respeta la dignidad, especialmente aquí en la frontera, que respeta los derechos civiles y humanos.
Analistas dicen que la pregunta del millón de dólares es qué tipo de condiciones inhumanas podrían imponer los legisladores cobrando enormes sumas de dinero al indocumentado para regularizar su estatus, al tiempo que le meten en un endeudamiento de varios años y lo convierten en un empleado sumiso y callado al servicio del dólar. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
El gobernante de México, Enrique Peña Nieto, negó el miércoles que sus declaraciones sobre la apertura de la compañía paraestatal Petróleos Mexicanos, Pemex, a la inversión privada, signifique su privatización. El martes, en declaraciones al diario Financial Times, Peña Nieto dijo que se realizarán los cambios constitucionales necesarios para darle certeza a los inversionistas privados. El político priista, que llegó a la presidencia de México bajo denuncias de compra masiva de votos en el 2012, intentó el miércoles modificar lo dicho al Financial Times.
Que los hidrocarburos deben seguir siendo propiedad del Estado mexicano. Que la rectoría de la empresa nacional Pemex debe ser del Estado mexicano. Pero que hay necesidad de elevar la productividad y de ampliar la infraestructura instalada para explotar otras fuentes generadoras de energía.
Mientras organizaciones sociales mexicanas afirmaron de inmediato que se opondrán a la privatización del petróleo, nacionalizado en 1938 bajo el gobierno de Lázaro Cárdenas y cuyas ganancias representan casi la mitad de los ingresos del país. Martí Batres es presidente del Movimiento de Regeneración Nacional Morena.
Significa simbólicamente traicionar uno de los principales logros derivados de la Revolución Mexicana. El petróleo en México es un combustible, pero no solo es eso, el petróleo es historia, el petróleo es lucha.
Gerardo Fernández Noroña es un sociólogo mexicano y exdiputado federal por el Partido del Trabajo.
Me parece que Peña Nieto sigue en el camino de vendepatrias que ha escogido. Ha estado rematando el patrimonio nacional y la parte más importante que tenía que ir generando condiciones es la entrega del petróleo. Las transnacionales del petróleo anglosajonas prácticamente están en todas las actividades, exploración, explotación, perforación, transporte, en todas las actividades, violando el artículo 27 constitucional, y en realidad ahora quieren entregar los yacimientos petroleros. Nosotros debemos impedirlo, porque hoy Pemex produce 2.5 millones diarios de barriles, Eso cuesta $100 cada barril y 1 millón de barriles van para Estados Unidos. Ha llegado a producir hasta 3.5 millones de barriles al día. A eso hay que multiplicarlo por $100 y por 365 días al año. Es una cantidad importantísima. Nosotros no necesitamos de las transnacionales. Ya estuvieron aquí en México.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. And we're going to have a lot of special guests today, so stay tuned. I'll be introducing them shortly. Don't go away. Today, of course, is June 20th, 2013. Welcome.
The hallway. No problem. For only one reason. The president raises the question. Who wants a plan? The homeless. Our problem. For only one reason. A president raises the question. Who wants a plan? Who owns the
by Five. You are tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. You can also reach us by, a complicated browser address, but just go to freakradio.org and click on the little red dot at the top of the tuner icon, and you'll be able to check us out all over the world. We can I have a crowded studio, probably in violation of our studio rules. This could be the end of my radio career. But with me we have, I'll introduce you all one by one, Sonia and Carlos from the smashed, crashed, and bashed San Francisco commune recently. Is that correct, guys? Say hello, Carlos.
Hi, her name's Tanya.
Tanya. Not Sonia. Forget it.
Yeah,
it's Tanya. So much for what I wrote down. Thanks, Tanya. I mean, thanks, Carlos. We also have Colonel Terry. You all know his real name if you're radio listeners or Penny University attenders. Hey, Colonel true. Terry.
Yes, and I've been on the local radio programs on KSCO and KRXA, and I'm a smart, informed person.
And modest, too.
Yeah, I'm balanced, actually. But I happen to have had the interesting life's journey of working in three White House administrations and also working for Ralph Nader as a Nader's Raider in the 70s when I was younger.
But your main claim to fame is you are bringing in another one of these guests who is about to
yes.
be noted, actually.
And consistent with my idealism when I worked with Ralph Nader in the 70s, I met, at the matter of fact, at the KRXA goodbye party down in Monterey for Hal Ginsberg. A couple Fridays ago, I met Sonny Fawcett, who's going to be introduced. And Sonny is a nice person, a lovely lady, and she has been abused by the Monterey Police Department and Judge Maldonado of the Salinas Division of the Monterey Superior Court.
And actually, you know, we've had Sonny on the air before in audio. We haven't actually had you in the studio, but I've played a couple of interviews with you. Let me introduce the rest of the group.
Okay, please do that.
We'll get back to you,
we're going
to
get Sonny Justice before it's all over.
That would be an interesting phenomenon if it happened. Also, we have next Pat Kittle. Pat challenged me at the last city council meeting to let him on the show. Why not? Pat is a man with an opinion. Strong opinions.
Yeah, we can get into that later. I'm a tree hugger.
He's a tree hugger, environmentalist, and an outspoken speaker. I would have to say that's true. Finally, we have a woman with a flower in her hair. What's your name, madam?
I'm Sunny. Hi. Also known as Sunshine.
And also known, for those who are following her court records, as Sunny Fawcett, because that's how she's, I guess, described in the paper you brought in, Colonel Terry.
Yes, we did.
All right. So we're going to begin here. I'm trying to think of where you want to start. Has everybody got time to hang for? How much time have people got, I should ask? You're going to be, because otherwise we're going to, let me tell people there is a call-in number, first of all. If you want to call into the show, if you have comments, thoughts, updates, Free Radio is always into updates. If something's happening out there that we don't know about, I think the community should know about, call. The number is 427-3772, 427-3772. Terry, you wanted to say something.
I've got a commitment in half an hour, 40 minutes, tending to my 92-year-old dad, so I've
okay, well, let's begin with you and Sonny then, so that, you and Sonny and Pat, Carlos, Tanya, feel free to jump in at any point if you have any thoughts about what we're talking about or whatever. Actually, I think the issue you're bringing to our attention, let me address this to you, Sonny, is something that you brought to my attention, oh gosh, some time ago. Originally, you alerted me to San Luis Obispo's vehicular harassment of homeless people and concerns down there, and you actually got me to eventually get in touch with two lawyers down there, one of whom I think was on the air and talked about the issue. Although I don't know, the situation has markedly improved. There was, I think, their original attempt to drive away homeless people in vehicles. The law was badly written, so they got properly sued, but now they think they've got an even worse law. Sounds like the Santa Cruz City Council. But you also brought to my attention the fact that you have a very privacy-oriented approach or safety-oriented approach toward police officers when they stop you in vehicles. And you talked about this at some length on an earlier show. Cop pulled you over in Monterey. You said, well, you know, show me your badge, show me your ID. You kind of rolled down the window very slightly, put the ID through the window. The cop got pissed with you. You said, get me your superior. And I think you got away without a citation at that point. Is that right? No, you're shaking your head.
Yeah, I was never issued a citation.
But later on, you were hauled into court.
And I was never arrested. And a month later, I got a notice in the mail saying a criminal
complaint,
thank you, was filed against me for delaying an officer for 26 minutes when it was his choice to pull me over and keep me that long. And he's getting paid for it.
What was his cause for pulling you over initially, did he say?
Going too slow and impeding traffic after midnight when there was no traffic.
Is this on the freeway or on a side street?
No, it was in Monterey. And they left out a part of this in the DVD where he first tailed me behind a Motel 6 and put his lights on. I was the only one coming down the road. That was left out of the DVD, by the way. So he followed me from there down Fairgrounds Road, and then I turned left onto Garden Road. And that's when he, after a short time after that, I got pulled over.
And when did this happen?
This was October 19th, 2012.
What was the speed limit on that road?
Well, the maximum speed limit is 40, but not right away. When you first come to the stoplight of Garden and Fairgrounds Road, it says 35 miles an hour.
How fast were you going?
And, well, not very fast because I came to the stoplight, so I had to stop. Mm-hmm. And then I proceeded, you know, to turn left. And if you would have gone 40 miles an hour, maximum speed, that would have been very unsafe and very dangerous, according to what he wanted me to do. And there's a lot of curves, blind curves and whatnot. And it was dark at night. And there's deer in that area. There's all kinds of reasons to go cautiously.
So, I mean, I think it's some of us had the experience and heard about the experience. And police officers may pull people over that for their own reasons they regard as suspicious and then use a pretextual concern, like you're driving too slow, your driver's license light is out, your driver's license plate light is out, whatever. And sometimes there's a legitimate concern, you know, it could be, you know, you're the wrong race or possibly, you know,
well, Robert,
we don't want these, you know, these dark-skinned people in our vicinity particularly. Oh, you know, be careful about their kind.
Robert, so, I just wanted to say one thing real quick. I found out also that even if people do not have their actual driver's license in their car with them, mm-hmm. it's a correctable situation. They could have just given a warning thing, and then you take care of it. So people need to know that.
Did you have your driver's license with you?
I didn't have the actual physical one. I had a receipt, a money order receipt, for having sent it in. And I was told by my defender that that was perfectly fine. And they know before they even pull you over that if you have a driver's license and insurance and all that.
So I know we've talked, again, we've gone through this a couple times in audio that I've played in the past for all of you loyal listeners who may remember those old times. Mm-hmm. But we're now, like, you know, 8 months later, and it's June of 2013. This happened back in October. You have a right to a speedy trial. I take it you didn't demand a speedy trial.
I was never told a lot of things. In mm-hmm. fact, I haven't even seen my file until just a little bit ago, and that was just one file. I found out that we have three different files for people that don't know this. There's a public file, there's a private file between you and your attorney and defender, and then there's a third file between the prosecutor and the judge. How do you like those apples?
Which files did you see?
I only got to see, because I definitely pushed to see it, and my public defender was sick at that time, to see the public defender file.
So you broke into your public defender's office and grabbed your file, ran like the devil?
No, actually, the head of the public defenders, Donald Landis, had said that, eventually said I could. First he said I don't have really, that's up to the discretion of the public defender. But then I said, well, I just came from court and they told me I could go look at it. And so then he finally made arrangements
in
the library. This was probably one of the last times I was there, maybe a week or so ago.
And what did you find in your file?
Oh, my God, amazing stuff. There's another DVD that I didn't even know about.
And DVDs of the police, audio back and forth,
yes.
Radio and that sort of thing.
From the week before with the same other officer that showed up with this last situation. And I have not even gotten that yet. And it took a long time to get the first one. But also I found out that there's three different trial briefs in there. One for the public defender, one for the judge, and one for the prosecution.
Right.
I think it should be pointed out that she also noticed there was suppression of evidence reference written by the public defender regarding the conduct of the cops regarding the DVD contents and perhaps some other materials. Mm-hmm. So that not surprisingly, the little local cops in Monterey engaged in suppressing the evidence.
What evidence did they suppress?
This was the full DVD video, which showed the cops following her quite some distance, and then also their comments to each other, which were quite, if you will, abusive towards
what
the
did
woman.
They say?
Sonny, do you recall what they were saying?
Yes. First of all, I was told I didn't have the right to protect myself.
Keeping the car window down in an era when I happen to know of three examples I can recall where someone dressed up as a police person, even with police lights on his car, was stopping single, lonely women late at night driving in Maryland, for example, and later absconding with them and murdering them.
I know.
So it's understandable for a woman at 1 a.m. to be a little bit restrained in opening her window.
Well, I find it unusual, but I don't necessarily criticize it. I was surprised you got away with it, and I wanted to, I wondered if people in Santa Cruz want to use a similar approach if they feel they're being falsely stopped or if they feel there is some doubt as to the identity of police. You know, I mean, I know many of the police officers. They've got a whole bunch of new ones, so I suppose there's some I don't. Yeah. The officer was dressed in a uniform with a badge.
That's the thing. I know peace officers that do not behave like this. These guys act like bullies. The peace officers that I knew of were when I was working with the fire department.
Let's talk about the bullies. Yeah. Well, how did they behave?
I even said they need manners 101 and anger management. But
what did the DVD show about the dialogue they had? What kind of dialogue did they have?
Oh, my God. I didn't even know all this until I finally got the
DVD.
What
did they say on the dialogue?
Okay, so besides telling me I didn't have a right to protect myself, when I mentioned my constitutional rights, he mocked that and said, oh, we're going to talk about the Constitution now, are we? And then when he threatened to take all my stuff, that's when I said, didn't you take an oath to serve us and protect us? Because I don't feel served and protected. I want to speak to the chief. And I know I talked in a nice way, and I know the whole time they're talking to me, I'm looking for my paperwork. So it doesn't, so if people see the DVD from, behind the car, because you can't see everything inside, and just hear a lot of it, then you'll know that that's what was going on.
Sonny, at the beginning, didn't one of them say to the other one, and that's on the DVD when you have it fully, let's get this woman, let's bury her, something like that?
Oh, it was really weird. At the end, they came around the back of my car. First of all,
how many squad cars were there?
That's something I'm not real sure, but I think there were at least three or four officers altogether.
Initially, there was one officer, and then he called
one.
For backup.
And he calls for.
Well, the first two guys were riding the same car, I believe.
So there were two officers.
But ultimately, at least three patrol cars, and maybe four for little 90-pound Sonny.
Is that accurate, Sonny?
Could be, yes, yeah. Right. And not only that, but the officer he called is the same one that stopped me a week ago and harassed me for not having headlights on. And I want to make it very clear in the article in the Monterey Weekly, it's Chief Penko, the Monterey police chief, made note that he let me off several times for especially with having my lights on or not having my lights on. And that's
but
not
this
true.
This time you'd gone too far. let me ask our other guests in the studio who are patiently waiting for all this stuff to go past. Pat, do you have any thoughts on any of this? Do you have any comments of any sort? Or?
I'll pass.
Okay, and how about you, Carlos and Tanya?
I'm curious how this DVD, how did you get this DVD?
Okay, well, first of all, I had to really push for it because first
you got it 6 months, 8 months later.
Yeah,
right?
First it was like, oh, the DA has to look at it and the prosecutor has to look at it and the machine wasn't working, etc. But was really amazing what we found out when they came to the back of my car, and I didn't know anything about this. The first officer a week ago that had pulled me over, it's actually Sergeant Russo. Is it okay to mention names or not? I'm sorry. Okay.
We name names on this show.
I think it's important that people be aware of certain people not to. So Russo gets behind my car with Officer Olney and says, did she have her window up when you first pulled her over? And he said, yeah, a quarter of an inch. Then he says, yeah, it seems like she doesn't trust us. And then he said, Frank Russo said, yeah, when I pulled her over, I was just thinking of breaking her window. He says that on the DVD.
Well, you know, I'm going to try to give, you know, to be fair to our men in uniform or their officers.
And the other one said,
no,
don't do that.
Now, I'm wondering, the you could have gotten a speedy trial, but the public defender just chose to delay your case for 8 months?
No, not the public defender. Judge Maldonado chose to be abusive to her and make her keep coming over and waiting all day and watching every other case.
Well, the judge cannot stop a trial unless there's some specific reason. It has to be the public defender waives time.
No, the judge never initiated the trial. He let her
She has to initiate the trial. She has to do it. She has to tell her public defender, I want a trial within 45 days. In a misdemeanor, you have a right to a trial.
That was done. And there were excuse after excuse came up when you look at the full record.
Did you tell your public defender you were not waiving time?
Yeah, I said I wasn't waiving anything, and then yet it came out on the thing that it was waived.
I'll have to see the records to make sure she's not lying, folks.
I'll tell you what I suspect, having looked at the record, talked to her, and I've also spoken...
You saw the record.
I've also spoken to...
You went into the Monterey...
Shall we say lawyer? I've also spoken...
Terry, you went into the Monterey legal offices and you saw these records?
No,
is that correct?
I saw her copies of the records, which she has, which are certified accurate.
Okay.
I also have discussed her case with attorneys involved in it, as recently as this afternoon for half an hour on one occasion, and 40 minutes on another occasion. Mm-hmm. And I'm convinced that Judge Albert Maldonado, who, by the way, is described by attorneys who appear before him as an abusive prick, quote, okay, that Maldonado was a bully, and I am convinced that he was hoping that little Sonny, little 92 pounds, you know, 5'4" Sonny, would not show up so he could issue a bench warrant, da-da-da-da. And he kept scheduling her, knowing that she has to travel all the way to the Salinas Courthouse across Monterey County from Monterey.
Also, we should see, he's also, you're homeless yourself?
Yes.
For 8 years now.
So she's, anyway, the hardship on her, it's clear he was hoping she'd fail to make a scheduled appearance or arraignment or equivalent, and he could bring the house down on her that way. Clearly, they're not interested in giving her due process, and I gather not interested in giving lots of homeless people in Monterey County due process of law either. Mm-hmm. That troubles me as a citizen who cares about justice.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're probably taking a card from our a page from Santa Cruz County. I'm gonna kind of mix our messages here by asking Tanya and Carlos to kind of interject what has happened to them recently up in San Francisco, and then we can kind of go back and forth, and that you can give your thoughts on their case, they can give your thoughts.
Okay.
And Pat, if you have any thoughts at any point, and we'll get into some more specifics with you later as we get into the show. I didn't anticipate 4 additional guests, but here we are.
I must say that the abuses that have happened through these, like the police and all these other people.
This is Carlos speaking.
It is not surprising to me, but it still is really tragic that we are in a place where this kind of behavior is allowed, or, you know, a lot of times. Yes. I mean, it's made that way specifically to get money from you or
exactly.
Whatever. You know, it's
exactly. Extortion.
Right, right.
Coercion.
Something similar to me, something similar to what had happened to you happened to me, albeit I was more at fault. I was caught shoplifting, and usually they cite people out with a warning, and you're banned.
What were you stealing?
It was a notebook and some pens. I had no art material.
So you're just a fanatic writer. You couldn't take it.
Yeah,
the notebook lured you. You had to do some writing.
I just had to express. Oh.
You regret your crime at this point?
No, I don't. The only thing I really regret is, I don't regret anything about it. It's a notebook, you know, and. For some reason, I came to find that I had stolen about 14, because it was a notebook and 2 pens, and it turned out it was like $14 or something like that. Mm-hmm. I had no money, so.
Uh-huh.
I was.
You two are houseless yourself?
Yes, no house. Well, what had happened is I had an injury, and these security guards, what do they call them now? Prevention?
Oh, God, yes.
Security guards is good.
Yeah.
Or should we say armed thugs without any real authority? Go ahead.
Right, exactly. Yeah, these guys, they were huge. They came in, and I'm injured, and so they grabbed my crutches from my hand, and they immediately said things like, "You're faking." And I was, like, freaking out because I wasn't faking, and I was pushed to the ground, and... I kept saying that I wasn't resisting. I wasn't resisting. There were other people in the store, employees, saying that I wasn't resisting. Mm-hmm. I went to court. And
you should be glad that you weren't Richard Hardy, who found himself dropped face down onto the sidewalk by Officer Vasquez in a video that actually was taken. Probably negligence rather than malice on the part of Officer Vasquez and the Santa Cruz Police Department. But still, serious injury for this guy and abusive behavior that didn't, you know, yeah. Vasquez wasn't suspended.
And you have a right
suspended.
To protect yourself. You have a right to defend yourself. You can't call that resisting.
Right.
That's
well,
defending.
The thing is, they had gone way beyond any probable cause. They were literally physically hitting me and directly hitting me in my injury.
What store was this at?
This was a Safeway in San Jose.
Uh-huh.
And the thing that is most like your case is where there was video in the store, and I felt like I had a good case against them to say that I was the one who was abused because they had... you know, what cops classically do is to cover their tracks. They'll charge you with battery and things like that. So now you're fighting that in court, you know, as opposed mm-hmm. to them having to fight what you're going to say in court, saying that they battered you. So
that's exactly what's happened to this young gentleman right now that I got to see in a jury trial thing. They pulled his hair out of his roots at, just because he was supposedly playing his music too loud at Salinas High School when the officer could have just said, could you please turn that down? And he threatened him with, this is a violation, and you have to sign this ticket. And he said, I don't even know what this is about. And he said, are you going to sign this or not? He says, you have to sign this ticket. And he said, I don't want to sign it. I don't know what it's about. And then they pulled him out of the car. See, this is why your door should not be open. And threw him down on the ground. I got to hear the whole story. And handcuffed him. And he was supposedly trying to, you know, defend himself somewhat. And pulled out part of his hair by the roots. Horrible.
And this was a jury trial you witnessed? Or?
Yes, and it's the gentleman's name is Alan, and it was February 10th of this year.
What was the disposition?
And it was horrible because the Strickland prosecutor lady, she made it sound to the jury like he was this horrible, terrible criminal, and yet, and even showed pictures of the officer. She goes, Your Honor, may I show this to a witness? Who's the big
what was he accused of?
Playing music too loud.
Yes.
Oh, I've been accused of that.
And then they escalated
him too. Right.
They escalated it to resisting arrest
delaying
by
pushing
and delaying an officer in his work.
Was he found guilty?
I don't know.
In all probability.
I hope not.
What I would like to comment on, you know, I had a business trip to Stockton yesterday, and I got lost driving back in the dark on the highway, and I pulled over, and I've got my map out and flashlight on it. And a California Highway Patrol officer came up and rapped on my window, and that was okay. And it turned out he had crossed the road to check on me. I was leaning down towards the map, and he was concerned legitimately, was I all right or sick or whatever. And he went out of his way then. He was on his way home off duty, out of his way to drive me some miles so I would not get confused to make my way back to 680 to 880 and back to Santa Cruz from near Stockton. Excellent fellow. His rapport was great. You could tell this is a caring public servant. And in fact, I'm going to write a complimentary letter to the chief of the California Highway Patrol.
That's what I usually do.
Name and badge number. Mm-hmm. I also write negative letters when they're prompted and merited as well. But the people that have the officers Olney and Russo, especially Sergeant Russo, it may be in Monterey, clearly has the attitude of people who are attracted to be enforcers in our society. Some become police officers, some become IRS agents, and they like being little petty enforcers. And
really?
Their little sick, inadequate egos need this, including Miss Strickland, the prosecutor in Monterey.
Did you meet her yourself?
I've not met her, but I've talked to people who've dealt with her as both attorneys and other ways, and they say, mm-hmm. yes, she'd be a good Nazi. She just abusive, needlessly so, and inflictive. So my point is that, and in fact, I had a friend, an elderly gentleman, who survived as a teenager in a concentration camp the last 2 years of World War II, and we were both we defeated the IRS in a partnership that someone else had arranged that we invested in, and we had a celebration lunch. The IRS was coming after $20,000 from all of us completely illegitimately, abusively. And the bottom line was this fellow told me about his years in the concentration camp. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry about that. And he said, oh, no, no. I learned something I should share with you today, Terry. I learned that every civilization has people who become, who have these little ego need insecurities and inadequacies, and some of them become Gestapo agents and concentration camp guards in Nazi Germany. And in America, some become abusive IRS agents and abusive police department people and abusive prosecutors and abusive little government enforcers. So that's why the Bill of Rights is as it is. Our founding fathers knew well the wisdom of protecting ourselves from human...
Well, you know, it's always been my view that I don't like this, you know, bad apple in the barrel analogy, because I think the barrel creates the bad apples. I think the police system creates people who abuse their power because, first of all, they're charged with enforcing a bunch of laws that give them a lot of selective enforcement discretion, and they're charged with enforcing them against classes of people who are pretty powerless, usually. Not white-collar people, not well-to-do people, usually, but poor people, particularly homeless people. For example, if you talk Steve Clark, our deputy police chief, back in April, in the ongoing needle hysteria that has gripped Santa Cruz, thanks to groups like Take Back Santa Cruz and the Clean Team and the Downtown and Neighbors and the Santa Cruz Neighbors, he claimed that, you know, 42% of the contacts and 31% of the citations, I may have those numbers slightly wrong, were for homeless people. What he doesn't indicate, it was a big crime wave. Well, these homeless people are criminals. But in fact, of course, the crimes he's talking about are things like camping. That is to say, what I call survival sleeping, and I'm sure Pat and I are going to have some disagreements about this at some point. But because of the fact that the laws are skewed and the police are not just in charge with enforcing them, but they get pressed by neighborhood gentrification groups to do that, groups that want to maintain the value of their property or enlarge it, you know, if you want to talk about transients, transplants from San Jose, from other areas, you know, who are investing here in Santa Cruz. Don't give a damn about the poor people here. They care about, you know, the value of their property. They want to turn things into gated communities. They want to see the place upscaled, has been my general perspective on this. And so I think the police department essentially follows along as a sort of a private security force for this group of people. And that's and they also, if you look at the origin of a lot of anti-homeless laws, like the sleeping ban, the section of the camping ordinance makes it illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock
at night. Civil liberties say that's totally illegal because...
Not our civil liberties union. They haven't said shit about that. They don't. They haven't got a word to say about that. But in other cities, the ACLU does express... You know, it says obviously you can't criminalize someone for falling asleep at night.
Definitely.
I mean, certainly criminalize them for despoiling the environment, as I think Pat will talk about. Criminalize them for littering. Criminalize them for... abusive behavior of other kinds.
For everybody.
But
not
for survival behavior in a society that is growing increasingly wretched. Let me ask you about what happened to you two, Tanya, Carlos, up in San Francisco. I know that some members of the Occupy Santa Cruz group went up there after doing what I call the visible protest, the visible sleepers protest here in Santa Cruz. That happened in April, where people were sleeping in front of the post office trying to... Well... The Armory winter shelter had just closed, so 100 people had no legal place to go. And these were the only six that wanted to, you know, make it a point, a visible point. And they got these receipts from the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I call the Homeless Services Center, that said, you know, you're on our waiting list, which supposedly should immunize you from prosecution for citations. But instead they were given tickets for blocking the sidewalk and for other things.
Yeah. This is important.
I'd like to see that. You know, I'm being shown the victory in Monterey against the sit lie law, which I went to their Monterey City Council meeting some weeks ago. These folks then went up to San Francisco, and there's a commune up there. Tell us about that commune and what happened up there, either of you. Tanya, you want to give us the dope on that?
It was a space in which many different people lived over the course of a year. Probably any time there could be anywhere between 5 and 30 people living there. Probably over 100 people stayed there overall. And it was just anyone, like transient artists, musicians, activists, would all collect there. And it was a really interesting environment.
there's
neighborhood kids.
Where was it?
It was in San Francisco.
Where in San Francisco?
The address was 200 Broad Street.
What neighborhood was that in?
And that is, what the hell's the name of that neighborhood? I don't know. It's really close to Park Merced.
Park Merced. Is that
it's very close to State.
I think it's Ocean.
Ocean View. Ocean. Yeah.
So this went on for a year, and I guess there was some attempt for this collective to try to eventually get title to the property or something. Were you working on that? Or?
Yeah. The issue was that people went in, started squatting. They were evicted before, but then they got into legal proceedings, and they were talking to the owners to try and gain ownership of the building. And the idea was to turn it into a kind of community center, which, in essence, it already was kind of turning into, because lots of community members and even kids would come over and play at the house. And the main problem was that the house wasn't a house so much as a commercial space. It used to be a church. But before people had gone in there, it had been like a drug den, essentially. It was just before any of the SFC people, which were essentially splintering.
SFC is San Francisco Commune?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And these are all people that are activists, and they split off from other things like actions in Oakland and San Francisco. I mean, just all over. And then people would also sporadically show up just throughout the whole time of the SFC. But
And what happened recently that resulted in the police closing this down? Or?
I'm not entirely sure as to what. We had spoken to police and the owner and some private investigator before that, like literally a month before.
A court date was set up.
That's right.
For like a month, but
court date for what kind of procedure?
I'm not entirely sure.
Civil procedure, criminal procedure?
I think, that's right, it was a civil matter. It became like a civil...
They wanted to evict you? That was the idea? Or you wanted to make some claim on the property?
Well...
We were making a claim.
We were making a claim on the property. But we had improved the space. We were growing, like, gardens.
There was papers. When the owner showed up with the cops, they didn't have any formal papers that proved he owned the place. So the court date was about that.
Oh, so he wanted to throw you out. That's
right,
what it was about. So,
but, like,
so
2 weeks later, we woke up at 7 in the morning to... You have 5 minutes or you're being arrested.
Yeah.
And everyone was sort of scrambling. Everyone just woke up. And we looked outside, and there was probably like 20 cops.
Yeah, they
with full riot gear.
They'd sectioned off the whole block, so they were blocking traffic. And these cops that came in were not your regular cops that had shown up before, where it's just like the squad cop, but it was the armed cop with
riot
gear.
Well, you're clearly a terrorist group, right?
Shotguns. Right, yeah, of course, yeah.
The media was already there, too.
Oh, yeah,
that
was the other thing.
Like a news station van set up.
Yeah. The news had shown up just as quickly as the police had. And
did the neighbors rush out to defend you and say, stop, stop, these are our friends?
The first time they came out, they did that, and we pushed them back, and they were gone. And then 2 weeks later, they came back, and it was a little harder to do, seeing as how they were shoving guns in everyone's faces.
And it was like 7 in the morning.
And it was 7 in the morning, so people weren't
the first
really
time this happened, how many police showed up?
Like 10, maybe, but
and
none
you say
of them
the neighbors
were...
actually came out to support you?
Yes. Yeah,
how many neighbors came out?
I'd say like 4 or 5. There had been a few that had stayed with us because they themselves were going through some hard
times.
There
weren't any neighbors saying, get rid of these bums,
no,
these damn scumbags,
we
hippie types.
We had communication with the community in that area, and they were completely fine with us being
plus
there. In fact,
doing
like neighborhood
nice
kids would come and like hang out and like barbecue with us. And
you'd think that if we took an empty space and turned it into like a communal space where we're growing gardens and feeding
yes,
homeless people, it'd be
nice. Oh,
it'd be promoted, right?
I think people tried that at 75 River Street here in Santa Cruz, trying to establish a community center, and 11 of us found ourselves facing felony and misdemeanor charges, 4 of whom are still going to trial in September.
And that was for a squad?
Yeah,
that was a bank. That was a vacant bank building, still vacant bank building, next across from Wells Fargo Bank, leased by Wells Fargo, and I don't know, maybe kept empty, or maybe they don't have enough business to hire it out, or it's been sitting empty for 4.5 years now.
Jesus.
Downtown.
For some reason, it seems to me like the people with money paying the police see it better that a space go and rot or house a bunch of crackheads as opposed to, like, actually being used by the people around the building for something positive, like feeding people who need food.
So is anybody arrested in this police raid?
Two people were arrested.
Who are they?
Two friends, Sonny and Dante.
Sonny.
Well, another one.
Sonny. A different Sonny.
Is a male Sonny. Right?
A male Sonny, yes.
The Sonny who came to Santa Cruz with Natasha?
Yeah, you know Sonny, yeah.
I do.
And Dante, who's big, I mean, he's very deep into activism and he's very young.
Well, what are they charged with?
He was only picked up for prior, like, a bench warrant or something, but they released him later that night. And Sonny, what happened with him was interesting. He was asking the cop questions, basically. He was basically asking the cop questions, and they were like, oh, you're getting too close, you're stepping over the line, and they, like,
they just grabbed him.
Were you a witness to this?
Or? Yeah.
And how close were you, Tanya?
I was only like 5 feet away from Sonny.
I see.
It was a very small area.
What
so
questions
just,
was
like,
he asking?
Us over
they
there.
Kenneled us into someone's driveway.
And what? How many of you were there?
20?
That 30? Morning, there were probably like 15 of us.
Say, Robert?
Yes, Pat.
I wasn't at any of these scenes, so I really can't comment on them.
No, feel free to give your thoughts.
Well, no, I don't really have any because I wasn't there. And it seems like you guys have a pretty healthy debate going here. And, you know, my idea when we got together was going to be that we were going to talk about something else. So how about if we reschedule?
We can do that, but before we go, if you want to give us a sort of a taste of your concerns so that you don't feel completely that you've wasted 45 minutes on this conference.
I want to hear Pat.
Well, I don't feel like I wasted 45 minutes. I heard I heard what everybody had to say. Mm-hmm. But again, since I wasn't involved in any of these things, I can only hear their version of the story. My reason for being here is to discuss ecological concerns and how they might overlap with your concerns, which is basically homeless people on what is called public property and what to me is a forest that is set aside for the rest of life on the planet, aside from humans. And that is my concern, and that's really what I wanted to discuss.
Well, maybe we
can
begin
with
the
five
discussion.
People here, I don't want to bogart the conversation.
No, you've been very patient. I think, in fact, what I'd like to do is maybe have a bit of a discussion about this, and then perhaps we could take some thoughts from the folks, from the other folks here, who probably, I mean, we have three homeless people, what kind of a person are you? You're a housed person. Colonel Terry.
I'm a retired senior military officer.
Uh-oh.
But so, I'm an advocate for the good guys and truth and justice. And because I'm intelligent and well-educated, I'm a progressive on my politics and social policies.
Of course. Well, let me say this. Pat, you're a man who I've... we're usually in line at City Council, at least we have been at different points in the past. Speaking at oral communications, your issues have been overpopulation, immigration, despoiling of the environment, and perhaps safety issues at different times. I'm not sure what about that last one.
Well, I guess you could throw that in there, but I'm not as concerned about my own safety as I am about the well-being of everything that makes this county as great as it is.
You had some harsh words for me at the last city council meeting. I actually wanted to play that, but, you know, that's kind of, you know, fancy radio shit. Let's talk about the substantive issues and your concerns that you wanted to raise and coming in here. And we can reschedule for another time, too, at some point, if you'd like. But you might want to raise them now.
No, I don't have any problem raising them right now.
Sure.
Yeah. I've been doing habitat restoration for over 20 years, in the local wildlands, ranging from out on Nuevo Island, Big Sur, to the San Bernardino Forest as of the last couple of years. And almost without fail, homeless people are not respectful. To put it mildly, they are not respectful of the place that they are intruding on when they're living in the forest. And I have a big problem with that. And anybody that cares about the environment that's seen what the homeless do to it has a big problem with that. Big problem with that. And the idea, I've challenged you over the years to bring up the subject with your homeless, the homeless people that you care for. And you think that they have no alternative but to go in the forest, so by necessity that makes it okay. Well, I have a problem with that too, but even setting that aside, if they are going to be in the forest, they should be good stewards of the forest. They should resolve that they are going to leave the forest better with them having been there than if they hadn't been there at all. I mean that. And that means they ought to be doing habitat restoration. They ought to be finding out what they can do to contribute to the well-being of the forest if they are going to intrude in it.
Can I say something about that, too?
Well, ma'am, I'll let that set for now.
Yeah, go ahead.
I understand what he's saying, because none of us condone bad behavior. And at the symposium that we had in at Monterey Peninsula College, which I was very, very actively involved with, even got a complimentary letter from Jane Parker, the Board of Supervisors, we talked about that. And it's not just homeless people that are trashing things, though, to be all fairness. There are other people that are not homeless that are doing this. So for either one, it's not okay to do that. And one of the solutions that we were focused on for the symposium was that we put people that do not have vehicles, the New Beginnings program, we put them in park areas to actually help clean up the parks and grow trees and plant gardens and earn their way to do this. And so there's really great solutions to that. We even joked about how Pebble Beach could be, take the golf courses off Pebble Beach and set up some tents and clotheslines. So get them involved too. It was pretty funny, actually.
I'd be happy with Pebble Beach being returned to the habitat that it was before.
Yes.
Before it became that.
Oh, wait a minute. What about them golfers, Pat, for heaven's sake?
Golf courses are ecological disasters, truth be told.
I think we have to agree on that one, man. I'm not beating up
on the homeless here.
So, any thoughts?
At least without justification.
Yeah. Go ahead, Terry, and then Carlos. Are you going to say something first?
Go ahead, Carlos.
You first, and then Terry. Go ahead.
Well, I can tell you that I do sleep in the woods, and I care very dearly for the woods, but all of that came through education, and for the most part, is self-education, and I feel like people who are homeless are very dispossessed and access to certain things, but education being one of those things. Moreover, like, not a lot of people doing outreach. I mean, you guys speak to the homeless, and that's good, but, you know, it can't be just you guys talking to the people who are homeless, and you know, it takes education to understand your surroundings and also care for them and understand that they're in your care, you know. The other thing is, yes, the homeless have been pushed out into the wilder areas, but those areas have been privatized too. And to me, it seems like, moreover, the real problem is property, because there are currently empty homes and empty spaces all over that could be utilized to house people, and we wouldn't have to try, and people wouldn't have to have, you know, live their entire lives in the woods and you have to see their mess or anything like that. They could be housed right now, but the thing that stands in the way of that is propertarians and the idea that they are more likely to get money if they hold out, as opposed to seeing that holding out is literally hurting people who are incredibly dispossessed.
And he's so right about that, because we found out in the symposium that they just got a grant for $36 million in Salinas to build a new juvenile hall. There's an empty building that used to be the probation department building that we thought would be perfect to, you know, start housing and helping teens, especially because we have 5,100 children that are homeless in Monterey County. And with one adult parent, that's 11,000. Monterey's population is 30,000. That's half. It's just, you know, mind-boggling.
Well, that gets so surrounded overpopulation, doesn't it? People shouldn't be parents if they can't take care of their kids.
I would agree with that, Pat, and I was going to address the big picture. And the big picture for me includes, I worked some years at the White House Science Office looking at forecasting the future of the country, the future of the planet. and the environment globally and regionally and nationwide. The big picture is our species, human beings, have been too successful. We are now 7 billion on the planet.
You blinked. We're well over that.
Well, we're heading towards 9 billion at current projections.
The part that we're over 7 billion is probably about the right size for the human population on the planet from an ecological standpoint.
No. Ecologically, I've seen the hard data from people like...
That varies widely.
Well, I don't think you can really argue with the hard data combined in... the Gaia Theory fellow, Lockwood, I believe it is, as well as I would suggest that we can, our planet can have people live American, Western European lifestyles, if those are such a great thing, supporting 1 to 3 billion maximum. The resources aren't here in terms of water, in terms of fuel, and then there's the pollution issues. But I think we could both agree, Pat, we've got too many people generating too much pollution, burning fossil fuels, and we are poisoning the planet. We're poisoning it chemically with fossil fuels, industrial waste. We are poisoning it electromagnetically. The information and proof of that would fill this room floor to ceiling several times over.
Yeah, we don't need to cite all the ecological woes. I imagine anybody that didn't just get back from Neptune knows what they are.
No, clearly the case. And I agree with you. People shouldn't be having children who can't nurture them. And that's the problem with 11 million people illegally here. I am sympathetic to the guys I see at Home Depot wanting jobs who are here illegally from Mexico. I've hired a few and I've paid them generously and bought them meals. I've heard their discussions and how they can bribe a U.S. Customs or border person easily to get in and out. But the problem is the damn Catholic Church has denied Latin American women pregnancy prevention. Their governments are corrupt. Their economies are owned and dominated, in the case of Mexico, by 36 dominant families that control, by some estimates, 87% of the actual wealth in Mexico. And there's no economic opportunity, so they're coming here. But again, we've got to decide, as a species, do we really want to overpopulate, overpollute, and poison the planet? And the United States, which is projected to have 561 million people in the year 2100. At current rates.
That estimate goes, the UN a couple years ago estimated, I think for the U.S., I'm not sure of this, but the UN did estimate that the population in the year 2100 would be 9 to 11 billion and rising.
Correct.
The idea that it's going to soon level off and problem solved is a myth. The way things are going now, the population will be stabilized by things that we really don't want to have happen. If we don't take some kind of proactive, honest, serious, cut the bullshit means of stopping population growth intelligently and compassionately, nature will do it for us like it always does.
So, well said.
Let me interrupt you, Terry, for just a moment and remind our listeners, if you want to call in, we have in the studio Sonia, Pat, Terry, Carlos, and Tanya. And me, Robert. You can call at 427-3772. Lines are open, it looks like. So give a call in if you got some thoughts on any of this.
I'd like to hear.
What does this have to do with homeless people and civil rights? Well, I'm curious, we'll find out, hopefully.
Robert, I'm curious if anybody out there agrees with me and Pat or has another view. Some of the Christian adherent delusional religionists will say, well, God will save us or Jesus will come save us in the rapture. No, we are responsible for the stewardship of the planet. Our species has been too successful. We dominate it. And since the industrial age, we have learned to totally extract and manipulate. And it is tragic that we are producing so much pollution per American when we could transition this economy to be far more in balance.
Let's turn to Santa Cruz County, though, and get specific and get local, because that's the issue that really can get people disagreeing, agreeing, but also discussing really concrete and relevant issues. Pat, you've been a major critic of, is it fair to say, immigration policy? Is that accurate or not?
Yeah, because I'm concerned about the carrying capacity.
I forgot your name. Terry.
Terry,
you're
just
right.
Mentioned. Yes, of course. And, of course.
On this point, let me interject, Pat. It's
sure.
Really timely. The 561 million Americans in 2100, we are projected to grow from 310 million now or so, was the latest numbers that Paul Ehrlich up at Stanford, highly regarded as very accurate in his projections. The 561 million, that means we're going to have to house, feed, clothe, provide employment for 560 million Americans and their component population.
Carlos has a thought over
And we can't do that. And we've also got a political system.
And again, Santa Cruz County. We're going to try to focus on Santa Cruz
County. I'm coming
back.
I'm bringing this to Santa Cruz County. We have a political system I observed in decades in Washington, D.C., that is so corrupted to serve the interests of the multinational globalist corporations that want to export U.S. jobs and have done so.
You know,
so they're exporting our economy.
I think many agree with this, though. Maybe some Republicans don't. I don't know. But the issue has got to be, what do we do in Santa Cruz? Carlos, you had a
I want to come to Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz to be at the forefront of setting the example, which is recognition of the realities Pat very capably articulated.
Okay. Well, thank you, Terry. Go ahead. Go ahead, Carlos.
I just wanted to say, this is kind of an old statistic that I just remembered, but there's something like 36,000 homeless people in, was it? Yeah, it's 36,000 homeless people in San Francisco. No, I'm sorry. It's, I'm getting it all over.
I heard a statistic that said 6,000 homeless people and 36,000 empty homes, but then I heard there's a lot of people that go uncounted.
You're talking about San Francisco.
So it's also.
Right. But I think there's far more than 6,000 in San Francisco. But
definitely. My point was that to me it seems like there is definitely like this idea that we're running out of stuff or that there aren't enough resources, but from what you could see in the extensive damage done to any environment, especially like here in Santa Cruz too, the local environment's kind of suffered a lot. I recently went to Big Sur and stuff, I see logging roads, you know, they're still around here, you know. And the idea that we have to extort more from the earth to continue to build houses because we're running out seems pretty ridiculous. It seems to me like we are wasting a lot of resources, not just in San Francisco, but everywhere. And, you know, people complain about the homeless and, you know, their impact on the environment. They are, in essence, a response to their environment. You know, like, there's been so much dispossession and waste that they literally have no choice but to be pushed out on the outskirts of what most would call, you know, civilized, I don't know, society.
There's a lot of empty buildings, like you said.
A lot.
Now, what about Santa Cruz? What about Santa Cruz? There is, in fact, Becky Johnson, who was one of the Santa Cruz 11, who was facing 7 years in prison, as Brent Adams and three others still are, for, they alleged that these people were trying to establish a community center, trying to house homeless people in the winter, trying to use vacant buildings. What should Santa Cruzans do about vacant buildings in Santa Cruz? That's the issue. And is this a way of solving the problem of environmental despoiling? I mean, if people can go inside buildings, is this a solution to the kind of bad camping and wrecking of the environment through feces and waste and so forth?
Well, we're talking about equitable distribution. I think that's would be a term for what you're getting at, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Throughout human history, there hasn't been that. People do not behave ideally.
It's time to start now, don't you think?
I'm not making excuses for greed. But truth be told, you take the average very poor person, if they happen to strike it rich, winning the lottery, being a super successful entertainer, whatever, they tend to be just like all those other nasty rich people, don't they?
Well, I think isn't there a system in place which money tries to generate more money, and if you want to hold properties vacant because you have the theory that speculation will give you more money down the road, regardless of the misery this creates at the present time. But there are ways to stop that. There are ways the community can say no to that, right?
Well, I guess breaking up the Fed Reserve would be, I would be all for that. I'm not familiar with finance. That's not my
forte.
I'm
not terribly familiar, but I'm thinking about the obvious thing, like
obviously,
profiteers, for example, here in Santa Cruz.
Well,
taxing real estate profiteers.
That's an option, but
would that be helpful, do you think, in addressing the issue that concerns you, which is to say, let's suppose I did more of what you want me to do, which is every time I talked about civil rights for homeless, I said, but don't forget to camp safely and cleanly and to pack your trash. And if you see a campsite that's a mess and you clean it up, just if you have any time at all. Let's suppose I said that every single time.
Well,
I would
appreciate that. I'm not sure how much effect it would have,
that's
but
my
I
point.
Certainly
I
appreciate
point.
It.
I would think that the homeless community in Santa Cruz could say, we're adopting this ethic, this ethos of cleaning up after ourselves as best we can, especially in a public park area. And we expect that of everyone, or they will be ostracized from the group.
All our shit to the city council to dispose of.
There should be dumpsters and other arrangements available.
Right, but there
I agree with you,
that's
Robert.
The point. There aren't.
But the city and county should say, here's the arrangement. We'll provide cleanup equipment and dumpster opportunities and equivalent. And by goodness, if we expect the homeless community to, if you will, meet us halfway and work this mutual cooperation.
I think that's a fair request,
sure. Are you talking about
formally
allowing homeless
in the
wildlands?
I'm really offended by this whole conversation, actually.
Hang on just a second.
I think it's kind of ridiculous to say that homeless people are creating waste. I have seen, beer cans near the levee and by the river, but most of the homeless people I know live off of the trash that's created by people with lots of money. And they actually eat that trash, and they live off that trash. So to say that they're creating the trash and the waste just because you hide your waste in a landfill, and then you don't have to think about it because it's over there and it's a problem for the future, that's not...
Thank you. Okay.
You're making the case that we're severely overpopulated. Even if we recycle everything we can reasonably recycle, which I do, by the way, there's still going to be trash. So there's still going to be things that don't get recycled.
Maybe the issue is industrial production. Can we stop that? If we stop making... technically all trash is generated by industry. So if we could stop generating trash through industry, maybe we could actually use the resources which we already have here.
Hey there, caller. You're on Free Radio with a whole bunch of people.
Hi, this is Radical Man. I think that I agree with these guys' environmental interests, but the problem is without dealing with the economic and social and political issues that have to do with homelessness, they can't solve these other problems because these people have no choice in where they're living. They try to do the best that they can, but if you're living unhoused, it's difficult to even function. Why are we expecting them to be able to spend all their time cleaning stuff up, especially when you have people like the clean team?
Because they made the mess in the first place, maybe?
I'm sorry. Hang on a second. So you asked the question, why are we expecting people to clean these things up? Pat, your response is?
Because they made the mess in the first place, maybe?
Yes, but suppose they have no place to throw the stuff.
They can carry it out.
I'm going to reiterate.
They're not housed. They have no way of containerizing this stuff.
Bullshit.
The trash was originally created
by
other...
the problem is bigger than just worrying about whether these people are doing this stuff. We need to change the system on a larger scale that deals with this politically and economically to help
people. In the meantime, if you can carry a full container into the forest,
are only concerned even about automating a lot of stuff that's going to drain a lot of energy resources rather than putting people to work doing things where they can earn a living so they won't be homeless.
Fair point.
Okay, so Pat, you had a response. Go ahead.
You're justifying, or at least...
I'm not justifying anything. I am saying that these people don't have options.
I shut up to let you finish your point.
Go ahead, Pat. Hang on there, caller. Go ahead.
You're basically justifying people trashing the forest because they're so downtrodden. If they can carry a full container into the forest and illegally intrude into non-human habitat, they can damn well take the empty container back out again and recycle it.
Caller?
Yes, I understand that. But the problem isn't that simple. The rest of us can go put our trash and recyclables in a can. And somebody comes and magically picks it up and takes it away. For these people, they don't have that. They don't have a roof over their head. They're out there because they're afraid of being busted or beaten or killed by the cops.
Carlos, you have a thought?
All these ideas about having the homeless pick up trash seem really demeaning, to be quite honest. And if you really want to be serious about ending homelessness, put homeless people in homes that are already empty and exist and don't require you to dig out massive resources to create something new because it's already there.
Well, I agree with him on that. Certainly there's a lot of available homes that we could put people in right now. But we also need to give them a way to earn a living so they can continue to take care of themselves as well. But certainly I'm in agreement about putting people in homes. When I see a lot of places being that are abandoned, run down, or just some slumlord is sitting on it until he figures he can get some yuppie sons of bitches in there, is a waste of time. I think we need to put people in there. But that means that we have to stand up and not go dirty, wearing dirty bathrobes with buttons on them and stuff like that. We're going to have to be more militant, and we may actually get beaten or killed for doing it. But we are in a situation that is equal to the 1930s and worse. And the fact of the matter is we've just had another downturn in the stock market, and that we don't know what that's going to leave even the people that have money with anything. Where are they going to be?
Sonia has something, and then and I think...
I just wanted to say, this is Sonny. This also got brought up to our at our symposium, and you know it was emphasized that these places that are empty right now are already insured, and if any of these owners want to use them for some great purposes like what you're talking about, it would also be a tax write-off, charity stuff. So there's a lot of benefits for anybody to come forward and do that and work on the level of, you know, helping us get out of the homeless thing, just like what you were mentioning, because we don't want a Band-Aid approach or just throw some crumbs at people and you're good to go. We actually want to put people to work. And we've also got to stop the ticketing, $100, $200, $300, $500 tickets for sleeping in your car, and then you end up with record. First of all, you can't make the payments. Then you lose your vehicle if you have a vehicle, and then you're arrested if you can't make those payments. It's a vicious cycle. So we really need to focus on a solution and not, you know, just beat this thing around and around and really help everybody get on their feet again. And he's absolutely right with that.
Pat, your thought before our caller passes on.
Santa Cruz, you and I disagree on this, Robert. You maintain there is no such thing as a magnet effect as it applies to homeless people seeking a community that makes things attractive for homeless people. To me, that's pretty convoluted reasoning. If you make things more attractive for anyone, you're going to attract more of the people that are attracted to that. Is that a fair thing to say?
Well, she's shaking her head. Maybe she'll answer.
Because that came up, as a matter of fact, at the symposium as well. If we make it too attractive here, then it'll be a whole bunch of other people coming here. And that's not true, because the New Beginnings program and other programs that have really helped, every city would be responsible for maintaining their own stuff. And that would make everybody, you know, not have the same kind of pressure for just one doing it. In fact, we talked about how Pebble Beach and Carmel and all these other cities also need to join in and help out, and not just, you know, one Salvation Army in Sand City. I mean, that can't, you know, be for all the people that are homeless. And it's not just homeless people. It's everybody that needs to not trash things.
So, caller, do you have any other thoughts? Because I'm going to clear the line in case...
Well, I certainly agree with her, and I agree with the other person that was talking about housing people. But I would also say the only thing that I could say about this being a magnet, it seems to be what's happening right now in the city council and the city government and the cops basically are in on the idea of making this a magnet for more yuppie scum to come in here. And the problem is their numbers are diminishing. These people can't, there's more and more of them, these high-tech jobs are vanishing too. And as they import people in here, they're going to take lower wages even for those. And I'm not against immigrants coming to this country, but I'm saying it's deliberately done so there's no collective bargaining for blue-collar workers, mm-hmm. and there's going to be no there's no way for even any kind of arbitration or anything else, even for white-collar workers. And they have been people that have never been unionized. And I think they should think about it, but they always thought of themselves as an elite.
Thank you, caller.
But that's what I see. They're trying to, and every city is trying to do this. They get their little artsy galleries and coffee houses in there to try and with fake bohemia, and then they try to get the yuppies in there, and the yuppies don't like the real bohemians, and they don't like the homeless, so they want the streets cleaned, and then we have fascism like we see in Santa Cruz. I saw where I lived in Alameda, Oakland, and even Berkeley. So, I mean, the places that I used to think were havens for people like me who are the boho types, they're vanishing. And so I think it really speaks to the issue to me of what's happening with homeless people. And who knows who next of us will be homeless, given that today that there's been another downturn in the stock market.
Thank you. Thank you, caller. And feel free to call again if things get quiet here, okay?
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay.
Can
someone explain? I'm sorry.
Call-in number is 427-3772. A lot of hot topics. Let me. I mean, I know you want to say something, Terry, but I want to.
I want to ask a question.
Yeah.
What is a bolo? Pardon me for not knowing.
I you know, he may call back and talk about that. I think it has to do with a bohemian kind of fellow or a.
I think he said boho.
Boho.
Okay. What does that mean, please?
Bohemian.
Bohemian. Okay.
Bohemian. You know, one of the issues that has divided even people who consider themselves progressive is. How to treat immigration, specifically not how the federal government should treat it, although that's the relevant issue, but how should the sheriff deal with people he runs into who are guilty of minor offenses? Sheriff Wowak has refused to do what the Board of Supervisors has advised, which is to leave him alone. And, you know, if the ICE, previously the INS, wants to go after him, that's their affair. But, you know, you don't want to break up families because of a jaywalking tickets and things like that. That's one issue, which,
right.
And I feel quite strongly about that. But the other side of that issue, and I want to hear about from both of you, is what the caller was talking about, that, you know, large numbers of immigrants are traditionally a way of diluting union strength and the
mm-hmm.
strength of working people who have fought for a lot of rights over the decades. And that seems, and that's a contradiction that I heard when I had public defender Glenn Maurer of Santa Barbara on the air. He was very progressive. He's always defending homeless people, but he's a member of the Green Party, but he's very hostile to current immigration policy in the sense that he thinks, I don't want to misquote him, but I got the feeling he would prefer to have even more restrictive immigration, considering its impact on labor. Let me give mm-hmm. you, Pat, a chance to attack, and then you, Terry, go ahead. If you want to say anything about that.
Well, Cesar Chavez was a pretty harsh anti-immigrant himself. He actually went down to the border, by some accounts, and got physical with illegal aliens sneaking over the border. We're talking about Cesar Chavez. All right.
Mm-hmm.
He later changed and adopted the Reconquista mindset. But the point that needs to be made is this is not a matter of hating anybody. It's a matter of ecological sustainability. If we wait until, if we don't have some kind of border, some kind of immigration policy that actually works, not just what it is today, which is a joke that everybody, including the illegal aliens that sneak in here, laugh at, then the only thing that's going to stop us from having more and more and more immigration. Now, think about this, because this sounds like I'm just making this up. This is true. The only thing that will stop us from having more immigration will be this place will become the worst place on earth. Because if we have open borders, whoever happens to be in the current worst place on earth will come here.
Well, again,
once we're the worst place on earth, people will stop wanting to come here.
It's an abstract argument, Pat, but
here's
Carlos to respond, perhaps.
I used to be an immigration lawyer's paralegal, and I was often faced with, families getting split up over literally like tiny infractions, because that is the law. It's like if you're an illegal immigrant, you're immediately deported, regardless of the trespass or whatever. And to me, it seems kind of fucked up that Europeans would come here and
push out all the people who were here originally, and then state that having more people in here is ecologically unsustainable. I mean, to me, it seems like it became that way. It wasn't like that because there were people here before living just fine. And then a bunch of strange men from a different country came here. I wonder what would happen if natives had similar immigration policies today. Where would white Europeans be?
I agree that our country got started from people coming over from other places.
Illegal Puritan immigrants?
But,
is that what you're saying?
Well, you're accusing
our forefathers?
But there were American natives here first. Columbus did not discover America. And then who got pushed out? And then we had Hispanic people, right? Did anyone see Day Without a Mexican?
Yes.
Very, very educational.
Yes.
Because you'll really appreciate where all the cooks went, all the farm workers went, how the senator was going to get his burrito. really fun things. But, yeah, we have to have respect for everybody. Our own grandparents and forefathers have come from other places. If we trace our family tree. And the Statue of Liberty, what did it say on there?
Pat, any thoughts on that?
Oh, do I have some thoughts on that? The Statue of Liberty has a poem that is supposed to justify our population growing endlessly. I have a problem with that. You know, it's kind of a folksy little poem, but it doesn't...
Give me you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched, and so forth.
That, you know, we're talking about ecological reality. Right now, we are in the sixth major extinction in the fossil record of life on Earth, which goes back a half billion years.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, ecologically, the planet is in worse condition than it's been in since the dinosaurs died off 65 million years ago. Quite literally. That covers all the ice ages. That covers minor extinctions in between. That covers world wars, famines, everything that's happened in the last 65 million years. It's the worst right now, and it's getting worse by the minute. And every second, there's two more. The population of the Earth increases with over two more humans every second. And nothing gets said about that because...
But how does this relate to immigrants coming in or not coming in?
Why should we import more poverty? Why should the United States import more and more poverty?
I would like to discuss the idea that Europeans... I'd like to discuss this idea of what Europeans did. Carlos is quite right. There's no excuse for it other than everybody takes advantage, historically has taken advantage of their ability to lord it over somebody else. The Europeans invented guns and ocean-going ships, and they did pretty much what anybody else would have done if they happened to have invented those things first. Does that make it okay? Absolutely not. But it certainly doesn't mean that Europeans were uniquely evil. They simply happened to take advantage of something that they came up with. If the Aztecs or the Mayans came up with ocean-going ships and guns and sailed off and discovered Europe, do you think they would have treated the Europeans any better than the Europeans treated the Native Americans?
Carlos, your response.
I am not trying to justify this, but the point is we have to figure everybody has basically taken their biological imperative to maximize their own reproductive success at the expense of others throughout the course of human history and prehistory. And are we just going to keep reenacting that behavior
Well, there is the gay population these days.
Yeah.
Right.
We can always kill them.
Right.
Yeah.
And there are people... And there's people like me. As a teenager, before I even read The Population Bomb back in the 60s, I decided I do not want to have kids. I tried to get a vasectomy from Planned Parenthood. They said, oh, you're too young, you may change your mind. So, two abortions...
So you did it to yourself, Pat. You shouldn't have done that.
Well, I mean, over the decades, two women had to get abortions as a result of me. And I tried to be good. I paid for them. I was at the clinic with them. But nevertheless, that sucks. If I could have got my vasectomy when I asked for it, that wouldn't have happened.
Did you ultimately get a vasectomy?
Yeah.
Oh, they're good for you, man.
Well, of course. And I don't have any kids. And now I'm being told about all these people who have kids that they can't afford, and I'm supposed to feel sorry for them. Well, I do feel sorry for them, but I don't want to pay for them, and I don't want the behavior to continue. Well, I spend
I don't
most
know if the
of
two things are necessarily
I spend most of my time
connected.
I spend most of my time.
Yeah. Carlos wants to respond. Yeah. That's a mouthful, Pat. So let's see
that
what
is.
Carlos has.
Well, there's two things. There's one thing about you said about why would we want to import poverty? Well, I would go so far as to say that America exports poverty through industry. Industry is all about acquisition of resources at cost. In a country called Ecuador, where my parents are from, they mine the land for oil, and the oil is sold to America from Ecuador at a dime a barrel.
Wow.
A dime a barrel, okay. So clearly there's a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Exploitation?
That's the word, yes. Exploitation. A lot of exploitation. And, you know, I would say that it's primarily industry or industrialists or people trying to capitalize, you know. And I really feel like, to be quite honest, that, yes, it is possible that, it is possible that if natives created sea, what did you call it?
Ocean-going ships and guns?
Well, maybe not guns, but ocean-going ships, they would treat people differently, mainly because, from what I understand of the culture, for the Native Americans, even though they did have war and fighting, they thought things far more communally. You know, like
they weren't capitalists. There wasn't a capitalist system in place.
They were still fighting, and I understand they were still fighting and violence and all these things. And I feel like psychologically, maybe those things could have been worked out through over time. But there are definitely systems in place that exist today that aren't necessarily from this nation in origin that do kind of implement this idea of capitalism over everything, where you kind of have to come up and be on top of everything, you know. And I think if you study a little bit in anthropology, you can kind of understand where some of these behaviors come
from.
Let's
get back to Santa Cruz County, folks.
Right.
And let's get back to homeless people, too.
I would agree.
I want this to be in Santa Cruz County.
Well,
let's get back
Santa
here.
Cruz, again. Yeah. Smart, intelligent people informed who are intellectually and personally honest are going to recognize the reality of, one, we've overpopulated this planet with people. We're over-extracting resources and over-polluting.
Is Santa Cruz
overpopulated? And now, with that said, Santa Cruz, I think so.
Yes.
Santa Cruz County, the water shortage is demonstrating that.
Along with a lot of other things.
Wasn't the university a large gulper of water?
Not entirely.
It isn't?
The main gulper of water, and Pat, correct me if my top-of-my-head information isn't precisely accurate, but jump in. The damn golf courses are horrible.
I don't want you to attack our golfers.
The Seascape golf course is putting water on its greens and fairways that are drinkable.
Rather than engage in these sort of generalized...
No, I'm not general. I'll be very specific.
Are you suggesting that we go to city council? Should we occupy the golf courses and stop them from misuse? All right.
They're ecologically immoral and unethical.
So you're prepared to organize
it's unethical for the city, and the city of Santa Cruz is subsidizing the Del Vega golf course in both its water usage and apparently its operating expenses. I can't comprehend.
So would you might support a sanctuary camp in the golf courses?
Sure.
Pat, what do you think of a sanctuary camp in the golf courses? Would that make it too amenable to the homeless, or would it be a good trade-off? What do you think?
Again, there's the magnet effect, which you deny exists, but I mean the fact that people want to move to Santa Cruz because it's a beautiful place.
What about moving out of the forest into the golf courses into a sanctuary camp?
That
idea, I'll bet.
Well, if people will practice birth control and stop population
growth. That's in the future.
Sure.
What about
next year? No. All you're doing is putting Band-Aids on population growth.
But I'm talking about Santa Cruz County.
I'm talking
and the homeless
about Santa
right
Cruz
here
County.
Today.
I
just wanted to say on the whole population thing, did we ever consider all the people that are dying right now, too? I mean, there's a lot of trade-offs there, too. And
homeless
people die
20 years younger, too. So they're helping the population problem.
There's doctors
maybe more homeless
that
will
die
result
in
a resolution to the population problem.
But what I'm saying is, it's like, nature takes its course, and, there's people dying, there's people being born, there's people dying, and same goes for animals.
Santa
and
Cruz,
talk else.
About Santa Cruz.
Okay.
I don't want these generalizations.
Okay.
Can't get anywhere with them.
So as far as the homeless situation goes,
And the job situation. What happened to free enterprise? Remember, that's what our forefathers were talking
Santa
about?
Santa Cruz. Talk about Santa Cruz.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. We
what are you talking about in Santa Cruz?
Okay, so...
What policies
so
are you recommending be changed in Santa Cruz?
Okay, so
or
how
Monterey,
about the free school?
From.
Did we bring up free school? How wonderful that is? And how we can take... We were talking about taking grandparents with all their wisdom and helping them with child care. If, you know, you're talking about kids and all this kind of
and
stuff.
And I'm talking about homeless people and the issues around...
Right.
My concern is civil rights for homeless people. And also, you know, the various... Right now we have a massive attack on homeless people from people who believe that they are a menace to public safety. Let me ask this group, are homeless people a menace to public safety in Santa Cruz? Because that's what Mayor Bryant seems to think. She's organized a task force that is meeting every 2 weeks. It'll be meeting next Wednesday on this issue. And they have 19 issues, looks like 15 of which are concerned with what low-income people are doing. Not about rape, not about assault, not about murder, not about burglaries, but, you know, illegal camping.
Okay.
Things of that
Did they
sort.
Talk about all the students that are going to school and working and still can't afford to have a home? That's another situation to look
at.
Well,
they have their parents to fall back on, and I think you're right. I mean, they use up the housing resources, and the university, I think, as well as the golf courses, uses up the water. But the question is, you know, some of the main issues that are now being, I don't think they're really issues. They are pretexts that are being used for people to, instead of focusing on real issues in Santa Cruz, they're going to be, you know, they're creating a climate of fear, and I've seen it on the streets in Santa Cruz. I heard about it yesterday. I've got interviews I was going to play today. Probably won't have time to. But it's...
Are they using Roundup? Are they using Roundup
I
here?
I haven't heard they're using Roundup
well,
on anybody.
Well, they've been doing that in Monterey.
Well,
with
you know, Santa Cruz
too.
Lags
really
in the
okay.
Roundup area, obviously. So, but, you know, let me ask all of you, what about civil rights for homeless people as a rule? Do people feel that they're being treated fairly? They're given too much latitude? I mean, Pat's talked about a magnet effect, which I do dispute because I say that on the basis of what's happened in Miami and other cities where they find if you remove unfair attacks on the homeless for such things as sleeping, you don't get a massive increase in the number of homeless people who show up. At least that's what the social services claim, because they would be getting more... And more people coming in. That's what they found.
So you're saying if you make something more attractive to people, you're not going to attract more people. That just doesn't really make sense.
But that's what the facts show, then, Patsy. That's the problem. Unless you think they're lying about it. I mean, I don't really think they're lying
about
it.
Well, people can skew a survey to come up with the results they want.
But it's not to their advantage to skew a survey. No, because I'll be right with you there, Carlos, and Tanya. Anyway, you know, I mean, this is an issue you and I should discuss in greater detail when we have more time. But and we could talk about it now if we want. But there are
the
a few other
council,
people who want to get in here. But go ahead,
I have plenty more to say, but I don't want to bogart the conversation. Go ahead, Carlos.
Go ahead, Carlos. Tanya, you too have some stuff to say. But.
You're asking about civil rights here in Santa Cruz
for
homeless
people? Yeah, that's
what
I'm asking. The magnet effect is a real issue for you. I think it's a bunch of horse shit. But
like I say, I got a lot more
rights,
to say about
civil
that.
Rights, civil rights. Of course. I want to hear it. But civil rights is the issue. The question, though, is that an issue that can we come to some agreement on that, or are there some really serious differences of opinion in this group as to whether homeless people's civil rights in Santa Cruz County and city are being violated with any regularity?
Yeah. I think... people with money who push forward all these legislation and, you know, the taking back Santa Cruz people too, they kind of have this idea about rights, you know, the right to not have to see people lying, sleeping in the street or eating their trash. But the truth is that this place is so wasteful that now homeless people there's a surge. You know, there's more homeless people today than there has ever been in the history of America. And, you know, the reason being is not because people are being more lenient on laws in their places and making them more attractive to homeless people, you know? I mean, does it really sound to you if I told you, oh, there's less... You could sleep on the street in Santa Cruz. Like, that does not sound really attractive, not even to homeless people. Like, that's why we sleep in the woods.
And you can't sleep on the street in Santa Cruz.
You cannot. But I don't think it's leniency on laws against homeless people that is creating the surge. I think it's just that there's... that the waste of industry and the waste of our government is at such an extreme that it literally wastes people.
You know, like, here's perfectly good human potential if people just would try and understand it. But instead,
they'd
much rather...
How about Agenda 21?
What's that?
How about Agenda 21? Let's talk about where the real...
Before we get into Agenda 21, did Tanya have something to say?
Yeah.
That's
Tanya.
Not right either.
You seem to have something you want. Yeah, maybe you don't. What's happening?
I wasn't, like, signaling.
Oh, okay. I thought I saw some waving over there.
But
go ahead.
Well...
Now you have a chance. Bogart in there. Go ahead.
I'm going to let Sunny speak.
All right, so that's good. let me point out, first of all, that you are listening to Free Radio 101.3 FM. This is also, you can find us on freakradio.org. We have about 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 days left of actual radio broadcasting before we go off the air. I haven't mentioned this.
What?
That's right.
What,
no
Robert?
The transmitter site is going to be gone in 6 days. And nobody has offered another transmitter site, as far as I know. We will still be streaming on the internet until we don't have enough money to pay for the studio, which I think is a bit further down the road, maybe a couple months. I think we did do a benefit last Saturday. I don't know how much, how successful that benefit was. Uncle Dennis will be coming into the studio in about half an hour. We'll be able to tell us more about that when he arrives. But if you like what you're hearing and if you want to hear more of it, find us a transmitter site. We need a place where we can set up a transmitter. We don't transmit a lot. We don't block anybody else. We don't cause airplanes to drop from the sky. And we don't interfere with other broadcasts. There was a blurb today on Amy Goodman about suddenly the FCC is allowing some low-power stations to open. We can't, because we have been broadcasting for 20 years illegally. And because we're illegal, they will not allow us to continue. As you can see, direct action gets the goods. We continue anyway because we believe what we have to say is important. Yes. And we shouldn't have to ask for permission to say it. Exactly. So we keep saying it. But if you want to help out, go to freakradio.org. If you have suggestions as to where, you know...
What about the university?
Place with a tall tree. Well, again, the university does not want to be probably involved in illegal activity. You know, but the private individuals are willing to help out with this because they feel it's such an important thing. And it's not criminal activity, but there are civil fines potentially there. Although nobody who has ever hosted a free radio transmitter has ever been fined. They have threatened us. They've threatened me. They've threatened other people with fines. They've never carried through. Doesn't mean they won't. They might at some point in the future. Things are getting worse. You know, we got drones. We got, force feeding at Guantanamo. We got indefinite detention. We've got new restrictions against homeless people and the entire community that were unheard of 20 years ago. You're not allowed to...
And they're all... A lot of these statutes and a lot of these ordinances are illegal. High law takes the vote of the people, by the people. People need to remember that and need
to
stand up with that.
They're
too.
A violation of basic human rights. That's the question I had for all of you. And that includes you, Pat, and you, Terry, because it sounds like you may be the more, perhaps not, because you came, Terry, with the issue of, you know, violations that... that Sonny was suffering.
Sonny was being abused by the gendarmes in Monterey County and Judge Maldonado.
What about Santa Cruz County? How do you feel about it here in Santa Cruz City?
Well, I want Santa Cruz County to succeed as a place that's livable.
I mean, should the homeless be driven away by some more severe legislation? Will that protect the environment? Maybe that you would think that, Pat? I don't know.
It's not proper for a homeless person or a person with, you know, a mansion to pollute beyond what is reasonable to their lifestyle.
Is it proper for the city to ban sleeping after 11 o'clock at night on public property? That's the issue that I've always raised and raise again and again.
It's a basic human need and a basic human right for everyone, including the idiot that came up with that. Who is that?
The police department.
Okay,
Santa
well,
police
let's
department.
Have them stay up for a while and see how it feels.
It's a useful tool for stopping people at night.
Well, you know that in Monterey County, we definitely slammed the... sit down.
Yeah, but you also passed on two restrictive practices. Are you going to investigate the kind of permit parking that bans homeless parking at night and another one that bans smoking, which is to a large extent engaged in by homeless people?
Santa Cruz, although I know you'll disagree with me, Robert, but most people, including me, think that Santa Cruz already does far more for the homeless than the... What do we got here? Okay. Most people think, and again, including me, think that Santa Cruz already does a lot more for the homeless than the average community does. And property values are real high in Santa Cruz, right? Why is that? Because there's a very limited supply of places like Santa Cruz, and there's very high demand for it. Well, the same applies. Homeless people are attracted to this place for the same reason that people with homes are.
The high property values? The high property values?
No, they're attracted here for the reasons that people...
The very generous county services.
Give me an example of the generous county services.
The needle exchange program,
it's
for
gone.
Example.
There's no city needle exchange anymore.
No, there's a county needle exchange
right.
program. And
it's much more restrictive than it was.
The point is, this county engaged in it. If you go to Emmeline, you'll see clearly the county is providing lots of services to homeless and disadvantaged people.
Now, that's
including
debate on that.
Illegal immigrants from Mexico and Latin
and
America
who are doing a lot of work in Santa Cruz County that serves
some
you
are
every
not.
Day.
There's a lot of unemployed immigrants in this county right now. A lot of unemployed illegal
Do we
immigrants.
Have any stats on
Can
that?
I finish? Can I finish?
I'm just asking, have any stats on that?
Yeah.
I don't. You
I, no, but I saw...
They're easily observable at Home Depot and elsewhere, and I am sympathetic to their situation. I'm
Me
sorry
too.
They're part of an overpopulated part of the world that produced too many poor, impoverished people because the goddamn Catholic Church denied their mothers pregnancy prevention.
All right, so...
And it's not just the Catholic Church.
So,
they.
But getting back to the question I had for you about basic civil rights for homeless people, is Santa Cruz City or County too lenient? Are they providing too many wonderful social services that are luring homeless people from different places?
Yes. If you make a place real attractive, you're going to attract more people. That's just a no-brainer.
Have you actually talked to homeless people
about definition.
This? I mean, it's not
by
my
definition.
Experience. Sorry, Tanya does have something
ahead,
to say. Sorry.
The food and what were the other services? You talked about needle exchange and... You can find those pretty much in any city if you're homeless. I don't think it's what it is. I think it's just the warm weather.
That's true with beach towns.
Well, there you go.
Well, I think beach towns generally have
that
has nothing to do with making it. It's not being made attractive or unattractive. It's
already attractive because California's beautiful, and that's everywhere. What I want to say is this, that we shouldn't be so much thinking like, oh, we do all these really great things for homeless people, but why does homelessness exist in the first place? And to me, it seems like these half measures of feeding homeless people, including the social work of Food Not Bombs, is in essence just really kind of keeping ultimate collapse from happening. You know, like these people fall through the cracks, and instead of like fixing it, they're just pushing the people back up only to fall through again. This is in essence a lot of social work, and this to me is just like another part in an industry where the collapse or the detriment or the deterioration of things is also sold. So you have social services for homeless people, and you have all these services, these great services. You're creating jobs. You know, you're creating jobs, and it's all based on the fact that homelessness exists instead of actually asking the problem, why does homelessness exist in the first place?
And it's too vague and too general.
Well, how about the mortgage companies?
I want to talk about Santa Cruz County and city, folks. I don't want to talk about these generalities.
All right.
I'm interested in specifics.
Santa Cruz, I started...
You seized the mic. Look at this man.
I put it in my lap because I feel like I was talking too strident as I was leaning across the broad expanse of space.
You were just trying to get close to this woman. I know you're kind.
Okay, Pat.
Yeah. So, I apologize if my voice was strident over this
civil rights. Can we ask about that question?
What I want to say is...
Is there a problem with that?
No, I'm all for civil rights, but there are realities that have to be factored in, which I feel like you deny, and one is simply if you make a place more attractive to people, you're going to attract more people.
So if in theory we made it really unattractive, that would be a good thing for you.
No,
it wouldn't be a good thing.
No, just no more attractive than the next place.
Should you eliminate the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz?
Look, Robert, you're not in North Dakota, and you're not in North Dakota campaigning for
against
the sleeping ban.
Can you give me an answer to that?
Why are you here instead of North Dakota?
I don't know. I mean, if I had friends in North Dakota, I think a lot of the reason people come to places has to do with their family connections. And my family connections have been in Monterey County, not so much in Santa Cruz, but in Monterey County. But the issue to me, again, I've asked you, you favor a law that makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep at night, makes essentially 1,000 to 2,000 people illegal every night.
I favor a law that protects the forest. If homeless people are going to trash it, which I can tell you for 20 years. So let me finish what I'm saying. It won't take long.
Haven't answered my question, though.
I am answering it right now. Okay. I might not be answering it the way you want me to, but I'm directly answering it. If homeless people, and after over 20 years of being in the forest and cleaning up a whole lot of their trash, including their needles, and all kinds of other filth, I won't detail. I don't feel like I want them there. No, I don't.
So a sleeping ban is okay, then?
Because they are not going to be responsible if they're going to intrude in the forest where they're already intruding, and they're going to be jerks.
You understand you're tarring every single person who sleeps at night with a criminal behavior. That's what you're saying. You're turning sleep into a crime, and you're saying the reason we're doing it is because every person who does that, or even the majority of people who do that, are engaging in despoiling the forest.
Every homeless person I ever confronted in the forest swore up and down and sideways that they weren't the ones that was trashing it. Well, the evidence was all around them.
You've never met an innocent homeless person in the forest.
Oh, yeah.
You have? Yeah. Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah,
so not every homeless person.
Yeah,
every other homeless person.
He used to have a show here, as a matter of fact.
Right.
And you know him.
But in any case, you do favor, you would say, arrest that man for sleeping in public if the police want to do that.
Yeah, well, you're talking about downtown, Robert. No,
citywide, anywhere in the city, which includes the Poganip, the parks, all the Greenbelt areas.
I'm talking, the Greenbelt,
places where
no.
people have survival camps.
The Greenbelt, no.
Anywhere and everywhere. In other words, there should be no place where a homeless person can legally sleep in this area, except for the 5% that can get into these shelters, which are pretty wretched anyway, by the way.
Well, there's churches in UFW Hall and whatever. But
you guess.
Synagogues, whoever makes a big thing out of helping the downtrodden, and I mean that includes religious people, they have tax supported.
Leave it to the religious people.
They have tax supported places where
that's not a civil rights issue for you.
But once again, overpopulation will overwhelm all that stuff anyway if the birth rate does not equal
the
death rate.
I'm talking about civil rights in San Francisco.
And
tomorrow.
If immigration
tomorrow.
Doesn't equal emigration, which gets me to a point we haven't really touched on, and that is something we can do right here in Sanctuary.
Right here in Santa Cruz. That's a naughty word, isn't it? I mean,
well,
sanctuary.
That's exactly what I was getting at. We can stop. We can retract this sanctuary city status anytime, and that'll be a very specific.
That won't really impact the homeless.
Let me finish. That'll be very specific, Santa Cruz. And there's lots of homeless and lots of unemployed immigrants in Watsonville right now. Watsonville wants to convert some of the world's best farmland into more housing and more business, which they always do and always will be until they develop the last square mile of prime farmland because they are not prepared to come to terms with population growth.
And you asked about Santa Cruz locally, the county and the city. I want the city of Santa Cruz and the county of Santa Cruz to acknowledge the realities that Pat makes reference to. And the realities, boys and girls, are frankly, we're poisoning, overpopulating this planet.
So deny people
Santa
the right
Cruz,
to sleep at night?
Yes,
is that what
Santa
you're saying?
Cruz should decide.
In order to deal with that.
Hear my points. Thus, Santa Cruz here. County should set this example and city of recognizing reality. We have no more water available. We have no more land available. Are the highways not crowded enough
Put
for
up
you?
Gates around the city,
exactly.
perhaps?
No more zoning approvals. And say, we recognize the planet and this county has to set the example. The example is we stop here. Maybe the county ought to suggest that no woman can give birth in Santa Cruz County without having a license to previously become pregnant. If we were really serious, Pat, we'd have a license. Yes, we would.
She has something.
We'd have a license for pregnancy.
We have a woman
who
wants to
have a license.
You got to have a license to drive a car.
Right.
You got to have a license to be a barber.
How about a license?
Why not a license to be a parent?
Let's. Well,
no. I do not want some people I don't know controlling whether or not I can have a baby.
Right, especially as a woman.
Especially as a woman telling me I have to take care of their baby because they can't.
Right. And no one's asking you to do that.
Yeah. Oh, yes, they are.
No.
Let's see the welfare.
You know, it's interesting. Yeah. The amount.
Tanya, sorry. My point has flown out of my head, but like.
You were saying you don't want someone telling me.
Oh, I don't want someone telling me whether or not I can have a baby, but also, like, I don't, even if this, like, this law that they're trying to come up with, that you can't sleep at night.
Right. They're not trying to come up with it. That's been the law since 1978 here. Right.
And it's not a real law.
Yeah, yeah. It's an ordinance that the police act as though is a real law, if you want to play those games with the law. The fact is, it is an ordinance.
Well,
it is enforced
like
every night by the police.
Night.
Yes, it has been.
You know, at different points. And it's not enforced on everybody.
And that hasn't stopped anyone from coming and still being homeless here. And, like, throwing someone out of the city, they're just going to go somewhere else. That's not going to, like, solve the problem of them being homeless.
But it will solve the problem in my backyard. And that, you see, is the issue. And to some extent, I'm sarcastic about it, not in my backyard, NIMBYs. But I'm also talking about the local Santa Cruz scene, and that is our backyard. And so we have to decide.
And I wanted to say I have visited the shelters here and in Monterey, and it's not so glorious to be homeless. I mean, there are people waiting in long lines for food. The food is expired. There's food that's been expired for a couple years. And
it's dumpster food.
And the cleanliness or lack of cleanliness. I mean, there's so much there. And as far as the churches go, we have an iHealth program, which is for the men. They go to a different church every night.
Talking about Monterey, right?
Yes, they get a meal, they get a place to sleep, and they have a shelter overnight. They have nothing like this for the women. They've never had anything like that for the women.
But you know, wait a minute. You are having too many babies. That's your problem. You know, and I don't want to care for your babies.
And these churches...
Take your babies somewhere else. Drown them in the ocean.
And these churches can rotate nights. All they have to do is rotate the nights.
That's a good idea, too.
And men cannot tell women whether they can or can't have children. That is so not right. Any more than a woman would say...
Well, maybe Margaret Thatcher.
Well, you know, should get a vasectomy or take Viagra or whatever. I don't know how. Sorry.
Yeah, I think the first solution would be all the men should get vasectomies so they can't get the woman pregnant in the first place.
I agree.
Well.
So perhaps a vasectomy program for all the men in Santa Cruz. Compulsory vasectomies for all men. Would you approve of that, guys?
Actually, I would have done that in the community I saw involved in as a volunteer in Washington, D.C. It did not take me long to decide we should start paying unemployable, drug-addicted black men and inner-city men, born into an impoverished and terrible situation, frankly offering them maybe $5,000 or $10,000 for a vasectomy at age 27.
What about them white
That's
characters?
Something we ought to do. White the same is true of incorrigible white kids. Okay, who cannot be helped?
Offer it to everybody.
What about very, very talented white kids who like to spread their power all over the world and exploit everybody else? What about, should they have vasectomies as well, or do we want to spread that around?
Are you limiting that to white people?
I don't know. We try to be colorblind.
Sociopaths, yeah. We should reduce their breed
for
sure.
No, that's not patriots, not sociopaths. What's wrong with you?
Okay, I wanted to share too that I went to city council regarding my situation.
My sympathies.
Here. And you have 3 minutes. I think this is very educational, by the way, because I've learned a lot. You have 3 minutes to talk, and most people get up there and complain, blah, blah, blah. And the council people just go, yeah, we've heard it before, and they just sweep it under the rug. But if you go up there and you state your name and you state your situation and you state the solution and ask them to put it on the agenda and say what you want done and when, very important, the time frame, you'd be surprised at the results.
I would be very surprised.
Because I did that with my situation, and they actually referred, the mayor actually, how did it go? The mayor actually referred Monterey mayor.
Ms. Gale.
Yes.
Yeah, but they should look into dismissing her case. The
so
mayor said,
I've got to say, I am reaching the end of our time here together. If you come at Sunday, you could talk for 3.5 hours, and we would have really been exhausted.
And I'm going to be on the radio on this Sunday. I just want to say real quick, 7 o'clock at
5:40 a.m. Sunday at 7 p.m. KRXA, the progressive station in Monterey. Sonny Fawcett will be on and interviewed with some other interesting commentary.
Homeless, not hopeless.
Homeless, not hopeless is what the program. Okay, well, anyway, 7 p.m. Sunday, KRXA, 5:40 a.m., all the way over the leftmost part of your dial. And sadly, that station is closing down permanently. As a local broadcast station, they'll be doing a web broadcast, but and I think in a few weeks they are being bought out tragically by a Catholic radio station, which is going to spread its delusional poison. No, I'm not. I'm a former Catholic. I can say this. I know how evil and wrong and delusional
nothing worse
and dishonest
than a former
the Catholic,
Catholic
Church is.
They got okay. a whole lot of new people now to...
And they're going to focus on Hispanics,
all right, guys,
by the way.
All right, that's
anyway, but
I'm going to,
Robert,
I'm
you've done
yeah.
well. Thank you.
I think you've all done well. I mean, we didn't get any knockdown, drag-out fights. We had some, you know, beginnings of a stimulated discussion. Pat, you got a chance to get some of the issues out, I think.
We tried to keep people awake.
And you've been successful, I'm sure. I want to point out what I would have talked about had I been here alone, as is usually the case. I would have discussed the upcoming attacks on the Public Records Act, which finally the Sentinel and the San Francisco Chronicle are mentioning. They're going to gut the Public Records Act. It's been passed by both houses of the state legislature. Brown is likely to sign it in order to save money. It will give the local jurisdictions the option not to give public records or not to pay for them in the fashion which they've ineptly and inadequately done up hitherto. That was something I'll be talking about. Also, of course, I got lots of interviews that I've not...
Well, Santa Cruz County, in my observation, has a lot to hide of its mismanagement
right,
in some cases
corruption.
We'll
be talking about that at some future time, Jerry, if you want to get in touch.
Okay.
The DA has budget hearings coming up tomorrow, for those of you who want to get to the budget hearings for the district attorney. It's not clear what the timing is, but some of us are really concerned about DA Bob Lee's prosecution of specifically the Santa Cruz 11, the people who are essentially being scapegoated for the Occupy movement. And the Occupy movement is a very important movement of citizen outrage around all kinds of issues. DA's budget is, he's spent several hundred thousand dollars prosecuting people, seven of whom have been dismissed already. I'm one of them. I was facing 7 years in jail, but several people are still facing 4 years in jail each.
Illegally.
And that's coming up tomorrow for that issue, but the DA's budget is coming up. Also, you should know the DA's office, for the first time in history, as far as I know, in Santa Cruz, has been sanctioned by Judge Burdick for essentially concealing evidence, delaying, dragging defendants back to court again and again.
Illegally.
Burdick, and that was something that the DA Bob Lee is appealing, and that unfortunately the judge has not, the court has no attorney, and I can't get any of the attorneys to represent this case. Palo Alto is facing a crackdown on vehicular camping, vehicular living.
Illegally.
And we're not talking about littering or dumping your waste on the street. Probably people live in vehicles, so presumably, Pat, your concerns might be less applicable to them. They annoy the people in the houses because they make them nervous. You see, uncomfortable.
God. Are they jealous?
And I don't think they're jealous. I think
like
they want to have a community where only there are certain kinds of people there.
I got busted for camping in my vehicle. I had this was a long time ago, but I had my
Santa Cruz or
Santa Cruz downtown Santa Cruz because I couldn't start my pickup, so I hitchhiked back to Boulder Creek, where I lived at the time, brought my toolbox and my motorcycle back to Santa Cruz. I checked the fuses, and they all looked fine. Anyway, I ended up sleeping in the back of my pickup.
Sleeping illegally? Yeah, I don't appreciate that.
Yeah,
Pat.
3 o'clock in the morning, the Santa Cruz place wrote me a ticket.
That's not permitted in town.
Yep. So anyway, I told the judge what my circumstance was. I said, I think I violated the spirit of your, or the letter of the law, but not the spirit of the law.
And he let you off.
He said, well, I'll let you go if you will agree to a fine 3 times the normal fine if I catch you again. And let me advise you that I remember faces. Do you agree to that?
And you didn't say, fuck you, Your Honor. Instead, you said, thank you very much.
Yeah, I took that. So, but, yeah, I mean, I wasn't going to cause any harm, but there are people that camp out and they trash. You can find the trash where their truck was parked after they left.
We can talk about
that's
that.
Quite
my
common.
My response is always, if there's trash, that's a basis for a concern. If they're sleeping, it's not.
Right.
But let's that's another subject for another time. We have to kind of vacate the studio shortly because Uncle Dennis, perhaps you want to chat with, is coming in. I would have also talked about a May pickup on Sunday on the Santa Cruz County May take up pot grows. And there's also new regulations that will be re-examined around the counties.
Oh, don't get me started, Robert.
Medical marijuana stuff. And we'll try not to get you started at this time, Pat.
We have to
finish. I want to thank our guests, Tanya, Carlos, Terry, Pat, and Sonny for being in the studio.
I expect you to
tell Mayor Bryant at the next meeting that Robert Norris did let you in the studio and did let you talk. Very good. Actually, don't waste your time with Mayor Bryant, please.
And tell people to write into the Coast Weekly, the Monterey Weekly, and drop the charges and stop wasting taxpayer money.
Very good. And that's something you can do. Is there a deadline? When's your next court date?
That's in July, the beginning of July, first week of July.
Okay, well, I want you to call in and keep us updated on this. And
let us know
the time, the place.
Thank you.
And the people may want to come down and get involved.
Thank you so much.
Toilet is right down the hallway to the right there.
I also wanted to mention our court date, which is coming up on the 25th.
Okay. And tell us about that a little bit before
and
we go.
And that is... after our SFC action, this is in San Francisco, and I think it's at 9 a.m. San Francisco, May County Jail, I think.
And what is the charge?
The charge is, I was standing outside of SF State. I was invited over by some friends after I'd lost my home, and the police ransacked me and a few of my friends, literally blindsiding me and sucker punching me.
Illegally?
Yes, and claiming that I was trespassing, though I'd been invited.
And when is your court date?
And that's on the 25th. That's coming up real soon. Tuesday, I think.
Tuesday the 25th. And this is an arraignment or this is a trial?
Pre-trial.
This is pre-trial, yeah.
Tuesday pre-trial. And this is a... If you want to call in on Sunday, definitely give us this date again, 9:30 to 1, and I'll be able to, put it out with more clarity. Yeah. But Tuesday, and you give us the court and the day and the location of the court. Not that anybody's going to go to San Francisco, mind you.
Have you written the judge, too? There's a private side and a public side
That is it for Free Radio Santa Cruz's beautiful and much beloved Thursday evening Bathrob Spears broadside show. I want to thank the... folks for coming in, male and female. There's a large, hairy guy who's arrived in a green outfit, and he's going to be taking over the studio. I'm sorry to say, but here he is. What can you do?
Unless we have miracles.
And I will also be around probably at the, and I suggest you come to the Occupy meeting between, I think it's at 5:30 on Saturday at the post office, the main post office. Hudnabom serves at 4 o'clock, so you might want to come then and get a little food. Pretty good meals from Hudnabom on Saturdays. And I thank you all for coming, and that's going to be it for this edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Uncle Dennis is his usual lovable self. That's it for the show. I think what we'll do is we'll put on a little music so Uncle Dennis can set up and get it together here, and all will be well. Let's remember an old broadcaster from an earlier era, Phil Free, who had a fine song called Sleep on the Mayor's Lawn, which I always liked, and I'm going to play it again, so... So there. This show is going to be archived at huffsantacruz.org if you haven't had enough. And you can also get in touch with me off-air at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. The Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a largely defunct but still struggling civil rights organization that continues to fight on in spite of the caustic and wholly unnecessary interruptions of Uncle Dennis, even though I am 1 minute into his show, I have to admit. Yes.
You can get that on YouTube.
Oh, okay. I don't know how to do it, but I will take it with me if you want.
Please write on there so you know which one it is.
You better write on there. I'm going to finish the show up. We're going to do a little music, and I'll be back on Sunday at 9:30 in the morning unless I get a clue and do something else.
six-pack up on his ass. I allow the hobos in my yard, you know that? This train is bound for glory, man. And ain't no room in glory for no freeload of hobos. No, sir.